W1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Today's mass shooting by a bank employee at his bank in Louisville is not only personal for family members of the four dead, but for Mayor Craig Greenberg.
One of them was Tommy Elliott, a very good friend of mine.
Police say the gunman shot dead by officers had been told he was fired. Nashville's Metropolitan Council welcoming Justin Jones back, voting to reinstate one of two black Democratic Tennessee state reps ousted by the Republican majority last week. Two dozen state attorneys general asking a federal appeals court to freeze the ruling that a federal judge made suspending the longtime FDA approval of abortion pills. The Justice Department now handling the investigation of the highly classified leaked defense documents. White House spokesman John Kirby.
We're going to get to the bottom of this. And then if there's actions that need to be taken, as we learn more about the extent of what happened here, we'll obviously take those.
This is ABC News. Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles issuing a statement saying it's received Governor Greg Abbott's request for an investigation and recommendation to pardon U.S. Army Sergeant Daniel Perry, who was convicted last week of murdering a protester at a 2020 Black Lives Matter demonstration. Perry pleaded not guilty to murdering 28-year-old Air Force veteran Garrett Foster. Travis County District Attorney Jose Garza, who prosecuted Perry, says the trial and conviction were fair.
By refusing to accept the valid judgment of a criminal jury here in Travis County, the governor has undermined our rule of law in the state of Texas.
A truck carrying 40,000 pounds of contaminated soil from February's toxic train derailment site in East Palestine, Ohio, overturned in Columbiana County, Ohio today. Ohio's Environmental Protection Agency saying about 20,000 pounds of soil spilled, but Ohio's EPA says it will not threaten nearby waterways. Andy Field, ABC News.
Oh my gosh, it's more fun than a big block of Colby or cheddar. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Democrats and Republicans are calling for an audit of Wisconsin's veterans' homes after hearing from former staff and volunteers about overworked staff and unsanitary conditions. Much of the focus on Union Grove and Racine County, that home cited for at least 76 violations since 2017, including failure to investigate reports of abuse, prevent falls, and medication mistakes. Administrator Diane Lynch says, like many other facilities, they've struggled with staffing levels since the COVID pandemic. Wisconsin's DNR posting nearly 3,500 comments on its website Friday about new wolf management plans, which would eliminate the existing 350 animal population goal. The current wolf population estimated at around 1,000. Some farmers in northern Wisconsin say wolves prey on their livestock. I'm Jane Matinair. This is Civic Media News.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Talking Points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Another shooting, this time in Louisville. 5 people murdered and 8 hospitalized. And again, I'm sure there are thoughts and prayers. I'm sure all that. We're going to get that again. But this time, it wasn't a school. It was a bank. And according to Ted Cruz, this stuff doesn't happen because they've got guns at banks. Which is, again, another one of these weird moments where it's not the gun. It's not. Also in gun news, let's talk about a little gun news. You remember the 6-year-old who took the gun to school, shot the teacher a couple months ago? Well, turns out mom's going to be arrested. And maybe she's been indicted on recklessly leaving a firearm around and child endangerment. Felony child neglect, I guess, is the official charge. And a misdemeanor count of recklessly leaving the gun so that a 6-year-old could grab it, you know. And I'm not quite sure why they chose her. Maybe this is going to be the new way forward. We'll find out. But got to that. Also interesting bit of news in Florida. And this one kind of blew my mind because I'm still trying to figure out this whole the new Wild West gun culture. Evidently, 2 guys are driving down the road and they're shooting at each other. One guy yelled at the other guy. Another guy yelled back. They exchanged gestures, which in normal civil society, it happens. People lose their cool. You know, I'll beat you up on the side of the road if you pull over. And people just go on their way. Eventually, your exit comes off and you go. Now, 2 idiots had guns. They ended up shooting at each other. They didn't hit each other. Now, look, if 2 idiots shoot at each other and hit each other, I'm actually okay with that. That's how you thin the herd. But both of these morons shot each other's daughters. One, a 5-year-old girl, another, a 14-year-old girl. The 5-year-old got hit in the leg. The 14-year-old got shot in the back, collapsed a lung. Well, one of them is going to go on trial for the act. The other guy, they've ruled him in self-defense. Self-defense. And I'm going, hold on a second. I'm confused. Confused at the new gun culture. Confused at the new gun rules. I understand you got the right to stand your ground now. You don't have to retreat. You don't have to be sane and go, you know what, I'm just going to leave this situation. No. You can stand your ground with your gun. Again, I get 2 idiots with guns shoot each other. I get this. It's simple, straightforward. It fits neatly in a box. You both pulled the gun. You both... consequences. You'll each figure it out. They each shot somebody else. How is it that one of the guys walks away scot-free? He shot somebody. Wasn't the guy who was going after him. Am I missing something? And look, I gotta, my mind, I saw this gun story, another, you know, multiple people who are just going to do their, about their daily business, who aren't going home. And so I got a ton of them. And honestly, I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm not going to bother because this is yet another one of these issues we can't seem, we're not allowed to solve. We're not allowed to have discussions. We're not allowed to, because the moneyed interests are, it's all about keeping us against each other. It's keeping us pitted against one another. And again, I go back to Rupert Murdoch, Sir Godly Rupert Murdoch, who said, it's not about red or blue. It's about green. Everything we do, it's about green. The wealth class has figured out masterfully, I give them credit. You've got to be at awe at how well they keep us at each other's throats. Neighbors who've been neighbors 20 years, at each other's throats over who they voted for in the last election. It's masterful. Because again, it's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's about robbing us blind. And the thing is you come up with issue after issue after issue. It doesn't matter. We're never allowed to find common ground. We're not. Even if we agree, there's got to be something. Because we're force-fed these binary black and white choices, these extreme options that, you know, people don't agree. I don't agree with myself 100% of the time. I'm certainly not going to agree with somebody across the street. It's never going to happen. But we're put in this scenario where if you're not pure, if you're not in team whatever, you're against us. The Bush frame, you're with us or you're against us. And look, the right-wing media juggernaut, they know this. They understand this better than anyone. And I'll say all media, but more so the right-wing media. Boy, do they understand. Understand that the right wing gets outrage candy well. The outrage machine functions well-oiled, highly skilled. And it doesn't care. This is the great thing about right-wing media. It doesn't care if you're for or against. It just wants you on a side. You've got to pick a camp, got to go get into your silos, and then never talk to the other people. Because again, it's about green. It's not about red or blue. It's not about the issue. It's not even about the issue. It's about how much money they can grab from us, how much they can grift from us. It's about stealing your pensions. It's about taking health care from you. It's about taking education from your children. It's about destroying the American dream so that a handful can profit more. And I got into this over the weekend, and where my mind is in this, over the weekend, during a podcast that we do every Saturday, and an unfiltered podcast, if you will. FCC rules don't allow certain things to be said, so this is a little freer format. I had said that I had a problem with trans women athletes, you know, fighting in, like, I saw an MMA fight where a trans woman just beat the tar out of this other woman, and I was like, you know, I'm against that. I think we've got to, as a society, come up and talk about how we're going to deal with this issue. Because, look, I'm with you. I'm with the trans community. Live your best life. Be happy. Be who you are. Do what you need to do to lead your best life. I'm there. But you lose me when I get to the responses I got emailed to me, which is, if I'm not all on team trans, then I'm anti. And this just drove me nuts because I'm going, that's not how things work. I'm not in favor of you know, combat sports, having trans women in combat sports, the MMA, wrestling, you know. And it then came up over the weekend, and I didn't know this, that one of the swimmers who had competed against Leah Thomas, you know, and all that kerfuffle that went on, had talked about her experience of being in the locker room. And I'm not in favor of that either. But I'm not on, we have to cut all this up. I'm going, how do we as a society solve this? How do we move forward that everyone's rights and everyone's happiness are met without saying you have one of two choices, you're on this team or this team? And again, it's not even about the issue anymore. And this is what's so frustrating to me. because there are ways forward. If we were to come back to the town square, and I don't know, maybe talk to each other, maybe have a functional government of people who are willing to talk to each other. And I go back to some of the older people who I know who have served in Congress. You know, go back to the Reagan years. Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to get drunk together. Do you think you see that? You think McCarthy's over there with Biden? No, they're now pitted against one another because if one wins, the other has to lose. And this is the world that we're in. And it's whatever T-shirt you bought. If you bought the T-shirt, you've got to be on team T-shirt. Instead of going, you know what? Most people are like I am. Most people I talk to, like the guy I talked to at the gym today, most people are in the world of, I don't care. It doesn't affect me. I want people to be happy. I want people to lead their best lives. Doesn't matter to me. Everyone should have the right to pursue their happiness. You know, where I live in Pennsylvania, that's the state motto, pursue your happiness. And yet you've got legislators who are trying to figure out how to block people from that. And the majority of working class people, the people that I associate with, they're not on team either side. But when you start throwing out this extreme rhetoric, like we're not going to let people talk at a college, are you kidding me? And we're going to protest and we're going to do this. Like, I'm all in favor of protest, but it doesn't make any sense. All you're doing is gaining attention for the person who feeds off of it. And you feed into a system that goes, what? We're going to send some crazy right winger to a college and hope that all of the students put up a protest so we can make money off of, oh, look at how victimized I am. You know what would be better? Let these right wing idiots come and spew their nonsense. And nobody showed up. Let them have their say. And if you really want to, maybe talk to the people who went. Don't mind them. Don't mind the speakers, because they're there to feed the outrage candy. Talk to your friends and neighbors. Talk to your family. Because it's amazing to me how many people that I've run into over the years and talked about these various issues just to gauge their positioning. How many people of my generation come back to, I don't really care. I don't care what you do. Just don't force me to do it. And this is where we had better, as a society, come back around to reality. Lead your best life. But if you think that everyone has to be 100% on your team, that's not happening. And that's where the outrage machine makes its money. Because it's easier to fall into, well, this is how we've always done it. And we can't make accommodations. We can't change because, hey, this is how we've always done it in every facet of life. And again, we come back to this position. And this is the most important point in this. It's never about the issue, whether it's guns, whether it's who goes to what bathroom, whether it's, you know, transgender athletes, whether it's education or healthcare or infrastructure or anything. It's never about the issue as much as it is about garnering the outrage so that the moneyed interests can continue to profit off of us. And the sooner we come back around and say, hey, maybe we all have some interest. Maybe we have an interest of I don't know, a country that can actually solve problems. Because here's the thing, and this is where I left my guy at the gym today. So the reality is, while we're spending all this time, energy, effort, all this division, all this divisiveness, all this hatred, all this anger, while we're doing all this, AI is going to take over the world. Automation is going to end most of us. And we haven't even thought about it, let alone talked about it. It's already, from people that I've talked to, it's already too far ahead to exist. It's already, the genie is already out of the bottle. And we haven't even talked about if the bottle exists. And we have legislators who, again, they're happy to get their 15 minutes of fame. They're happy about, hey, I can get campaign contributions out of this. But we're not talking about the real issues that really affect people's lives. these things are things that we have to figure out how to deal with. This is the era that we're in, and we're failing at it. And we're failing badly. But here's the thing, and this is where my mind was today, because I had someone call me transphobic, and I'm like, oh, if you say so, it's possible to be in favor and stand with the trans community and say, no, this is a bit too far. That's possible. And by alienating people who, like me, say that, you know, the sports issue is kind of something, what are we doing with surgeries for seven-year-olds? Is it happening? I don't believe it is, and I've been told it's not, but it's what people believe. If you're not in favor of that, do you get lost as well? I want to know. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I like my haters, so go right to the top. If it makes you angry, I want to know about it, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Because this is one of those things we've got to figure out. If we're going to move forward as a country, if we're going to move forward together as a country and maybe undo some of the horrible stuff, talking to each other matters. Want to hear your thoughts. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some good news. The president and the administration heading out on the road, second week in a row on the Investing in America tour. And look, last week, they were all over the place. And good for them. They're in Minnesota at the Cummings plant there. They were out in Georgia talking about solar panels, made it to New Mexico. You had people in Colorado, all over the country. You had Biden administration people talking about the investments that are happening in New Mexico, for instance. Pete Buttigieg was in Deming, I believe it was, talking about the $2.6 billion in money that's going to be going into 217 infrastructure projects there, whether it's transportation, broadband, or water projects. This is a massive investment in the state of New Mexico and going to be very helpful to folks. Portland, Maine, you had the first lady there talking about how important free community college, the experiment that they're trying in Maine, how important that is for workforce development. You know, you had the first lady also in Vermont, doing the future of America's workforce, again, providing free community college. So there was a lot of this stuff that happened. Mainstream media didn't really pick up a lot on this. And I think this is an incredibly important topic and one that everybody should be talking about. Look, this is how we're making lives better. This is what Democrats do very poorly. If this was Trump, man, there would have been, here's the thing. While he was president, everyone thinks he was doing this stuff, didn't do anything. There was a lot of infrastructure weeks. In fact, I remember it was like infrastructure week, 200 weeks in a row. Never got anything done, but cute little displays, lots of funny pictures. But this president, our guy Joe, not out there touting, patting himself, breaking his arm, patting himself on the back, actually getting the stuff done. This week, the tour is going to be going through Georgia, Kansas, Michigan, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, those working class states where manufacturing has been decimated. The thing that I love, again, this idea that we're going to reshore manufacturing or bring jobs back, we're going to give people an opportunity to support families. And as I've been saying, the way forward for this country is to unite people in the workplace. I've been saying this for years. As labor unions have been under attack, we've been ripped apart. As families struggle to make ends meet, as families struggle to save for college, save for retirement, save for any number of bumps in the road, people are getting angrier. The struggle is real. And again, we've got a political system that dealing with working class issues, not on their plate. They don't care. It's about the division. It's about, hey, look at me. It's about my 6-minute shot over at the F channel. This is why I'm glad Biden's running around the country going, look at what we're doing. And look at the jobs and the lives that we're helping. Which is why I think it's interesting that, again, Joe Biden has been the most pro-union president of my lifetime. And this is another issue. I know right now someone's at their computer. I know it. And here in probably 5 minutes, I'm going to get an email going, well, he didn't do anything for the railroad workers. Yeah, he actually did. Did they get everything they wanted? No. But what would they have gotten? Well, they've gotten nothing out of Trump, let's be honest. But again, it's this. You have to be 100% or you've got to be pure or you're nothing. But Biden has been the guy out there saying, look, the way we hold on to democracy, the way we fight for better opportunities is to unionize. Which is why when I came across this this comment by Tia Lee, who we've had on this program over, I think it's been about 3 or 4 years since she was on. She was the head of EPI for a while. She's now the Deputy Undersecretary for International Labor Affairs for the U.S. Department of Labor. During her virtual address at the Summit for Democracy in Zambia, she said, quote, unions are essential to democracy. If we believe in democracy, we need strong labor movements. And I'm going, exactly. But this has been one of the core tenets of the Biden administration. He said this back in 2021. He said, in a simple word, unions means there's a democracy. Organizing, joining a union, that's democracy in action. And what's interesting, and this is another one of these moments, and it came up to my friend at the gym today, that this never was a divisive issue. Everybody knew somebody who was in a union. Everyone, that guy makes a decent wage, got good health care. Wish we had that kind of health care. And aspired to be better, aspired to demand more. Now you say you get into these discussions with people, and they bring up the word union, and you go, well, those are just that. We've been told to hate each other on this, something that brought us together. This is what the GOP right-wing machine has done masterfully. They have taken what was once a strength and beaten it down so much that people use it as a weapon. And look, I'm proud of the fact that I've been in a labor union for over 30 years. I'm proud of the fact that we've fought for better wages, hours, conditions. I'm proud of the fact that I've seen people's lives, my own included, get better because of the work that we do and because of the contract that we work under. I want that for everybody. And I'm happy that we've got a guy in the White House who sees that as well. Now, what's interesting to me, and the reason I bring this up with Tia Lee, is that she's talking to the people in Africa about this. She's talking to people all over the world going, democracy, if you have democracy, you have to have a strong labor movement. That is what democracy is. And we're doing the work of promoting trade unionism around the world, of giving workers the ability to do better. And as one person said it's a foreign policy for a middle class, a global middle class. And my mind started thinking about, we're not doing it here because we're so badly broken. Policy-wise, we couldn't pass major comprehensive labor law reform in this country if the sun were burning down on us. So we're doing it overseas. kind of reminds me of, you know, the Marshall Plan, where we couldn't get national health care, we couldn't get a social safety net, so we went around to the European countries and we got it for them. This is kind of the same thing for me. My question is will we again continue to push great ideas and good American values out to the rest of the world while at home shunning them? It's remarkable to me that, you know, there are people who go, we don't need no stinking union, and then complain about how bad their jobs are. Huh. I wonder if there's a connection. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day as many as 139 workers, mostly women, were killed in an explosion at the Eddystone Artillery Shell Plant just outside of Philadelphia. The plant, owned by Baldwin Locomotive Works, opened in 1916 and produced munitions for the Russian Army. Baldwin also manufactured Enfield rifles and armored tanks for American forces. The United States had just entered World War I days before. Munitions production soared, along with the number of new hires. About 400 women worked at the F building at Eddystone, which was blown to bits. F building was where the powder fuses were manufactured, loaded into artillery shells, and then inspected. On this fateful morning, about 18 tons of black powder ignited, setting off thousands of shrapnel shells. This caused a series of detonations felt as far as 10 miles away. The blast blew some workers through the roof. Others were found nearby in the Delaware River. Of the dead, 55 were never identified. Hundreds more survived and were badly burned or seriously injured. Immediately, German and then Russian immigrants were scapegoated as responsible for the blast. The press shrieked in hysteria over alleged sabotage by German agents opposed to U.S. entry into the war. Others charged that Russian revolutionaries at odds with the Russian White Army were at fault. However, a guard testified that in fact there had been problems with electrically powered powder loading devices that had been malfunctioning for some time. He claimed the wires must have short-circuited and caused the spark. One woman worker insisted as she lay dying that a shell hit the powder and sparked the explosion. The cause of the explosion remains a mystery to this day. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
It's always instructive to hear powerful political officials declare that in the name of democracy, they must usurp the people's democratic authority. This has become all too common, as even so-called democratic regimes in France and Israel have infuriated their people by trying to ram vastly unpopular anti-democratic schemes into law by executive fiat. Luckily, though, our U.S. of A. remains committed to the people's rule, right? Moreover, our leaders agree that local government is best for its closest to the people, right? No. Since the once conservative Republican Party has turned extremist and downright goofy during the past decade, its governors and lawmakers have become knee-jerk autocrats, imposing their unpopular policies through a crude power play called preemption. This is the despotic use of arbitrary state power to cancel any town, city, or county policies that Republican politicians don't like. Preemption is an extreme governing tool meant to be rarely used in emergency situations. But GOP-controlled state houses in Florida, Texas, Ohio, and elsewhere now use it routinely as an ideological sledgehammer, crushing the right of local people to govern themselves. This has led extremist Republican officials force some of their racist, homophobic, and xenophobic nastiness on communities that vehemently oppose them. But most Republican preemptions are issued in service to corporate elites. For example, when local communities try to raise the minimum wage or prevent corporate money from corrupting local politics, corporate-serving governors rush to outlaw the people's will. This is Jim Hightower saying Texas lawmakers are even trying to supersize and privatize preemption with a blanket decree that all local ordinances restricting corporations are overruled by state law.
Welcome
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we talked about the other day, the two Justins, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, who were expelled from the Tennessee General Assembly, they have both been reinstated by the committees that their counties had. They're back in the General Assembly, and they're going to run for re-election. And I guarantee they're going to win overwhelmingly, which makes me go, why would the Republicans have done this? Makes no sense on its face. Other than, well, they really do want to destroy democracy. This is a show of power. Or is it a show of stupidity? Here to share some thoughts on which way this falls, I've asked my good friend Will Bunch to come talk with us. Will is a national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's also written the great book, After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics, and How to Fix It. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me. You know what they say, no Justins, no peace, right? So tonight we have one Justin, so I guess we have some peace. So,
but this was predictable. The Republicans had to know that once they threw these two out, and oddly enough, didn't throw out the white woman, and we'll get to that. But they had to know that this was going to, at some level, backfire. Or what's your thought?
I don't, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it because you're right. I mean, they expelled these guys. I mean, they had to know how the system and the process works, and they had to know that these Democratic, county committees and city councils that vote on this were gonna send them back, and they're gonna. I mean, this is just the temporary appointment, but then they're gonna run in these special elections in these districts that they won in 2022, and they're going to win again. Everybody knows they're going to win. So it was interesting. I was like trying to figure out, I'm thinking like, well, are they going to not seat them when they get reappointed? Because there is precedent for that, believe it or not. I actually wrote, it's funny, I didn't write about it in my column because it was kind of between columns, but I did a long thread on Twitter about the case of Julian Bond, the famous civil rights activist who in 1966 was not seated because right before he was supposed to take his seat, he spoke out against the Vietnam War and made some comments about the draft, and they thought that was unpatriotic. It was very similar in a way to today and the gun violence issue, but he actually won two special elections to take back his seat, and he wasn't seated three times before it finally took the Supreme Court to say that the legislature had violated his First Amendment rights and basically forced them to seat Julian Bond. So I was wondering, it just seems like today's Republicans, there's no limits to how far or how low, I think I said in the column, yeah, they're willing to go to, you know, make this power play, and they want to legitimize, certain things. They want to legitimize votes in cities that come from Black and Brown communities, which in this, like you said, you know, they kicked out the two Black urban legislators, and they allowed the white woman from Knoxville to retain her seat, albeit by one vote. But
I mean, just the image of that alone. I mean, if you're doing this, you got to throw her out too, just to make it look like non-partial or non-partisan. But they didn't. They someone said, yeah, no, we're going to make this worse.
It's a power play that we don't care how it looks. And what I can't figure out is, you know, did they sit in a room and say, we're going to do a power play, we don't care how it looks, or are they just that dumb that they didn't see how, you know, because you know, as it turns out, I mean, you know, when tonight Justin Jones led a march back to the Capitol, and he was sworn in on the steps, and they put out a statement saying, yeah, well, that's the procedure, and so we're going to let him back in. So they basically, you know, the Republicans basically backed down tonight. They didn't like go crazy and try and not seat him a second time.
Well, they're going to have to because they realize they screwed up. But in your most recent article, which I highly suggest folks take a look at, titled GOP Wages Asymmetrical War on Democracy Because It Can't Get the Votes, you had what I think is the perfect line. You said citizens who cling to it can't happen here need to look at what is happening right now. And I got to tell you, that's a perfect statement.
Yeah. Well, you know, this has been happening gradually, you know, in terms of if you go back 20 years ago, the strategy we were looking at was voter suppression, right? You know, how do we make it hard for people who aren't our voters to cast their ballots, you know, voter ID and other restrictions are taking away polling places, closing polling places on college campuses or closing polling places in Black neighborhoods. And it was, you know, how do we make it hard for people to vote? And the phase we've gone to now is just throwing out the results of elections, basically. I mean, they won't call it that, but the pretexts are so flimsy. You know, so we saw it in Tennessee with the two Justins, you know, this, you know, I mean, look, if they'd wanted to pass a reprimand saying you shouldn't have protested on the House floor, I think, I don't know, I would have shrugged, you know, it's like, all right, it's a reprimand, you know, I mean,
yeah,
maybe it was a technical violation of the rules, but they had to invalidate this election. They had to tell 140,000 people your vote didn't count. But the thing, and you know, and after Tennessee, maybe this is even less likely to happen. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen. But I start the piece talking about the election in Wisconsin because I think two things happened there that really dramatize what's going on right now. One is just the victory, and I have to apologize because I read her name all the time, but I never try and pronounce it. So don't you can pronounce the name of the new Democratic justice for me because I can't pronounce.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. So thanks for throwing that back to me.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I don't know. Janet, let's just call her Janet by her first name. So Janet Pease victory in Wisconsin, you know, huge voter turnout, the largest turnout for a non-presidential election of that type ever in Wisconsin history. I started with the example of the college town of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which is home to the University of Wisconsin at Eau Claire. In a precinct that basically is in the student center, so it's the college voting precinct. Largest turnout of any precinct in the city of Eau Claire, and 888 students came out to vote, six times the number of student voters that they had in the similar election 4 years earlier. And there were two issues, right? One was abortion. I mean, that was probably the biggest issue. And the other was democracy. I mean, Janet's opponent, Dan Kelly, was somebody who had actually worked for Trump in 2020 to try and throw out Wisconsin's election results. And, you know, I think you had a lot of voters who were saying, we're just not going to stand for this guy who's going to take away our abortion rights, who's going to take away our voting rights. You know, I don't care if it's an off-year election. I'm going to wait on this line for 2 hours and I'm going to vote. And look, I'm not endorsing voting lines. People shouldn't have to wait 2 hours to vote. But the fact that people are willing to do that, I mean, that's democracy in action. Yeah. I mean, and to me, so that's the Democrats winning by conventional warfare when it comes to politics, because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to win the war of ideas. You've got that, you know, our ideas on rights, on voting, on abortion, our ideas are better. And you're going to come out and vote for us at the ballot box, and they're going to count all the votes. And, you know, if you like our ideas and our candidate best, we'll win and we'll take office. And that's how it's supposed to work. And, you know, it seems even silly to talk about that because that's how it's supposed to be. But Republicans have realized that they're not winning that way. You know, they've lost the popular vote in 7 out of the last eight presidential elections. You know, they seriously underperformed in the last two midterms as well. And now they're getting blown out. I mean, you know, so Janet beats Dan Kelly by 11 points in this state that Joe Biden only won by 20,000 votes. And the Republicans are panicking. And so they are trying to undo democracy. And Tennessee was one example. But in Wisconsin, you have state legislators, state lawmakers, seriously talking about impeaching this new justice before she's even taken the oath of office.
Yeah, in fact, that actually came up even before the election. That was something that he would be open to. And you go,
this guy was running in a special election in I think it was outside of Milwaukee. But if the Republican won this special election, and it's a Republican district, if the Republican won, the Republicans would have a supermajority in Madison, in the state capitol, which means they could do things like, you know, impeachment on a party line vote. And the guy who was running in that special election said he was seriously considering impeaching her if she won. And I guess the pretext, and we're seeing this a lot, they're using criminal justice and crime as a pretext, right? They're saying that because, you know, they're Democratic DAs, progressive liberal DAs in these cities, and progressive liberal judges, and they're letting criminals.
That's the argument. The argument is they're letting all the criminals off.
Yeah, they're letting off criminals. They're letting criminals run wild in these cities, and that's an impeachable offense. You know,
it's the reason DeSantis got rid of Andrew Warren, who we've had on the program a couple of times.
And here in Philadelphia, where I am, you know, with the very progressive prosecutor Larry Krasner was impeached by the House Republicans. It was held up in the courts, and the Senate realized it was so ridiculous they're not going to actually vote on it. So he'll just have this impeachment on his record that they never tried him or voted.
I actually like him. I've had him on the show a couple of times. Good guy.
Great. I mean, yeah, you know, and he's, you know, like any political figure. I don't 100% agree with everything he does.
But I don't 100% agree with anything I do.
Same, right? So, he's taking Philadelphia in the right direction. I mean, his office has now liberated, I think, 28 people who were wrongfully convicted of murder in Philadelphia, for example. And, you know, we need stuff like that. And that, you know, people don't credit that. It's, you know, they blame him for murders, which, you know, how you blame a district attorney for a murder, haven't quite figured that out, but yeah. But they do that, and, you know, and but all over the country, you know, in Kim Gardner, the DA in St. Louis, they're trying to strip her power away. There's been a lot of attention because it kind of relates to the Trump investigations, but there's been a lot of attention to this bill in Georgia that, again, would give Republican legislators the power to remove these prosecutors like Fani Willis in Atlanta. And it's this war. And what do these people have in common? They were elected by an urban electorate. They were elected by people not like them, by black and brown voters, or, you know, college educated white liberals, maybe in some cases, but they were elected by the enemies of today's Republicans, you know, the woke left that they're at war with. And they're coming up with these pretexts now to, like I said, they've gone beyond trying to make it hard to vote. They're just going to take away your vote.
And that's sadly where we're heading. And then again, I go back to the quote, you know, because we all look at the, you know, the fascist era of the past and ask the question, you know, you didn't say it can't happen here. How could that possibly happen? And as you point out, maybe take a look at what's going on, at what they're actually doing. I do want to get your thoughts on the RNC going to Nashville on Friday to hold their little shindig. Kind of interesting timing. I know this has been long planned, but kind of more attention on them.
Yeah, I'm sure they regret now that they're going there, but in a way, but you know, they can't undo it. Yeah, you know, they're really in a catch-22. I mean, if their thing is that they can't win elections anymore and they have to do these other things to get around, they have to do these workarounds to get around elections, it's this downward spiral, because the more, you know, I mean, how many more how many more votes did they lose from young voters with what happened in Tennessee last week? I mean, they're really losing a whole generation. I don't think I mentioned in that precinct in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where college students line up to vote. I mean, they voted 87% Democratic.
Wow.
You can say college kids have always leaned liberal to some extent, but not at the numbers we're seeing.
And well, no, you could always say they've. And this is always the problem. You can always say they've leaned Democratic, but do they get out and vote? And in this moment, they have, which is why I said from the beginning, undoing Roe was a horrible thing for Republicans, because this was going to continually bite them. And it's going to, especially as Republicans show who they are by coming out with these even more draconian, these more outrageous, we want to track your menstruation cycle kind of bills. I mean, it's getting crazier.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the dad of I have a millennial daughter. She just turned 30 late last year, actually. And, so her and I know a lot of her friends, and, you know, they've been very politically activated these last few years. And it started with Trump, and then it just went right into this abortion thing. Yeah. In America, America's not like other countries that, you know, have mandatory voting or have a tradition of 90% voter turnout or whatever. You know, when I was growing up, voter turnout in this country was what, 50%? It's better than that now, but it's still a game of, if you can get people really worked up who weren't voting and get them to come out to vote. That's basically, I hate to say it, but it's basically how Trump won in 2016, that he excited a lot of people in, you know, these places like Altoona and these rural
places that used to be somebody, have manufacturing, places that used to have opportunity.
And those people had gotten so despondent, right, that they weren't voting in big numbers. Yep. And Trump, you know, Trump, who to their ears was, quote, telling it like it is, unquote, got them excited and got the people, and you had people lining up in those communities to vote. And, you know, I mean, and Trump won in 2016. He got 74 million votes in 2020, which is amazing. But he also alienated these young people and other voters to the extent where Biden got 81 million votes. You know?
And fortunately, I think we're moving in a decent direction. I like the policies coming out of this administration. But I hope folks will check out the new piece, Will, GOP Wages Asymmetrical War on Democracy, because it can't get the votes. Written by our good friend Will Bunch over at the Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Will, I appreciate the time. As always, incredible work. Hope folks will check it out.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Outstanding. Our good friend Will Bunch. Again, make sure you take a look at the piece. We'll get links out on social media. Again, take a quick break. Right back after this with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2006. That was the day of massive protests for immigrants' rights in cities throughout the United States. Starting in March of 2006, there was a series of coordinated protests in response to a bill passed by the United States House of Representatives. The bill would classify undocumented workers as felons, and it proposed a wall be built along one-third of the U.S.-Mexican border. In total, more than 5 million people across the country protested that spring. And on this day, protests were held in more than 100 cities. On May 1st, or May Day, large protests reached numbers not seen since the civil rights demonstrations of the 1960s. CNN described the impact of the protests in Chicago, reporting kids skipped school, men and women walked off their jobs, others didn't bother to go to work, businesses shut down for lack of patrons, veterans or employees. The protesters dubbed the May Day event a day without immigrants. The aim was to withhold immigrant labor and buying power to show their impact on the U.S. economy. A study by the Pew Hispanic Center found that at the time, undocumented workers made up 24% of farm labor and 14% of construction labor in the United States. The protests had an impact. The bill that would harshen penalties for undocumented workers did not pass the Senate. The AFL-CIO also recognized the importance of reaching out to immigrant workers. In August of 2006, the AFL-CIO introduced a national worker center partnership. For the first time, worker centers, many of which organize immigrant workers, could enter into formal partnerships with the AFL-CIO. Working with immigrant workers remains an important front in today's labor movement.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So what I find interesting, and again, this is the folks over at the Federal Railroad Administration, they've come out and said that the railroads have to prioritize train makeup to maintain safety, prevent accidents, and optimize train performance. Now, you may remember when we were talking about the derailments, a couple months ago, back after the February 3rd, derailment in East Palestine. One of our guests said, "Look, these railroad companies are making these big long trains, and they're not distributing the weight." They're throwing heavy trains on the end, and there's no real rhyme or reason. Whereas in the old days, as somebody who drives a truck, the heavy, and I've driven doubles for most of my life, the heavy trailer goes in front, the light trailer goes in back, just because of gravity and momentum and all of that stuff. So what their argument is that these train companies are going, these train barons are going, just slap them all together and get them down the road. Don't care. And what's causing it is having more weight at the back end, pushing everything forward and causing these derailments and then making them worse. And the reason they're doing it, of course, it's the money. It's the money, like everything else. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane and disturbed.
What has you today?
Huh?
What has you today?
Everything. So what I wanted to say was, you at the beginning of the show, you were talking about the divisions between, the two different groups. And I think to a degree that's true. But I think the main issue is number one, we have this collection of the right-wing Republican voters that have been so brainwashed by lies, we're a Christian nation and you got to do this, and the preachers jumped in on it. And then you have the politicians screaming and telling all these lies that simply aren't true. And, we can reason with someone that's reasonable and come to some sort of agreement, that, okay, we both want children to be safe and we want this and we want that. But that small group, which seems to be growing, I don't think there's any reasoning with them, Rick.
There's some people you're never going to reach. This is where the majority of people who are still reachable have to come together. Right. I've come into this mindset of, if I'm going to be canceled, I'm going to be canceled because the extremes I don't care about anymore. We've got to move forward and figure out the stuff that's important and do it in a way that give people the opportunity to lead their best lives. That's, again, my true north. If I step on some toes, I'm okay with that.
Right, and I'm with you. Everybody has individual differences and ideas. But I think the main thing that we're going to have to do is something's going to have to be done about these propaganda stations and the propaganda being pushed by the right-wing politicians. You have a good day.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. And look, the reality is what has to happen is there needs to be, I'm someone who believes in more speech, not less, more opportunities to talk to people. We need to come back to the reality that our politics should be where we solve problems, not cause them. And sadly, over the last several years, with the rise of the Tea Party and the rise of the Freedom Caucus and the rise of all of these moneyed groups who are being funded by billionaires, it's more about division than it is about getting stuff done. It's more about causing problems than fixing problems. And look, here's the thing. This is where the hope is. When I talk to individuals, and even ones wearing the shirt a lot of the times, the hat's a different story, but the shirt, if they got the shirt on, because without the hat, I think the brain still functions. I can get a lot of people who bought the shirt going, that's reasonable. There is a way to talk to people. And in fact, in Wisconsin, the reason that they got such a great turnout is they did what I've been saying you need to do.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Hey,